Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You have 80% of the American people who support a balanced approach. 80% of the American people support an approach that includes revenues and includes cuts.
Lie.
I do not understand what I think is the maligning and maliciousness of this president. Why is he different? And in my community, that is the question that we raise.
Because he's an incompetent communist.
Brawlers, a Detroit and barbecue dreams, you get the treat of the week.
Whatever, it's the Savage Nation on a Friday. No one's listening anyway. They're worried about hardening of the arteries and hardening of the brain. Welcome to the program. All right, play more. I don't care. Play over me. You don't care about it. I know the American people got what they deserve in the White House. They got exactly what they want. A slick liar who's incompetent and a communist, which reflects the majority of the American people. They want the welfare. They want the food stamp. They want free prescription drugs, and they want unlimited medical and dental care, and, of course, psychiatric care. And the rest doesn't matter. So that's why we have what we have in the White House. And, of course, they're using the race card now because he's in such trouble they have to go back to basics. I mean, Obama wouldn't have gotten where he is without the race card, without affirmative action. And the reason I allege that is because I'm guessing that that's true. And the reason I'm guessing that's true is because he won't release his college records, his grades, any of his writings or whatever, so we can only assume the worst. You have to remain skeptical of government, or else the government will turn you into a serf. At least that's what I learned when I was young. The liberal professors taught me that. Another big story is the killing of the little boy in New York City and the dismemberment of him, which I've been talking about for days. And the real question is, why has the media dropped the story of Libby Kletsky? After all, the boy was dismembered. Now, you say, well, wait a minute. There are a lot of missing children, a lot of kids killed. They're all the same, meaning that it's all a tragedy for the parents. But that shows you the thinness of the American media, how stupid they are. It shows you how imprisoned they are in their own rhetoric and their own fears. The reason they're not covering the story of the little boy, Libby Kletsky, who was not only abducted but dismembered, is because, A, he's white, and B, he's Jewish. It's not that the media is inherently against whites and Jews. It's that they're afraid that minorities will say, how dare you cover that story when so many of our children are killed every day? What are you conducting, favoritism in the media? That's number one. So that's the number one reason that you don't see it outside of New York City. But it's a major story for the fact that you have a little boy who is allowed to walk home by himself for the first time, just seven blocks, and that one day he's abducted, tortured, mutilated, God knows what this bastard did to him, and then he's dismembered and his body parts strewn around Brooklyn. But he is the kicker. Who did it? Who did it to him? A sex sicko who was also a Jew who lived in the same community. In other words, the Jewish community in Brooklyn where he lived is so insular and so, let us say, a condemning of the outside world. There's no other word I can use. I wouldn't say fearful as much as I would say condemning. They despise the outside world. They look down on the outside world. They look down on the outside world. It's filled with people not like themselves. It's true for all insular communities. By the way, all around the world, insular communities look at the outside world as beneath them. You got to understand how this works. Now they wake up, and guess who did it to the child? One of themselves. So the story has phenomenal interest to me for a number of reasons. The enemy within, number one. The guy on the bus, the guy next to you, is the one that you have to watch out for. It's not the stranger. So the Jewish people in the Orthodox community of Brooklyn are sitting and waiting for the Nazis to arrive. They're waiting for the swastika band, the band with the swastikas and the umpapa band, so they could, you know, get marshaled together and fight them, when in fact the enemy was there all along amongst themselves, and they did nothing to him. And yet the guy was an evil man. His ex-wife termed that he was a sex sicko. His wife said that Levy Aaron, the murderer, was a sex-crazed psycho who needed meds to handle a behavior disorder during his time in Tennessee, his ex-wife charged in court papers. Now, I want to talk about the medication, because Michael Savage believes that the profusion of the prescription drugs for so-called bipolar disorder, so-called other disorders, is why we're having an epidemic of such crimes in America. Not so much child abductions, although that's at a level that's unacceptable, but these conditions of worker shootings at work, a guy pulls out a gun in a mall. All of a sudden, it's all related to medication, because these medications are super dangerous. They don't work. What they do is suppress the rage, and the rage comes out in a violent way downstream. And I believe that there are too much overuse of antipsychotics, antidepressants in America, and I believe that we need to do something about it. The government will not help you because they're owned by the pharmaceutical companies. Make no mistake about it, there is no government when it comes to a thing like this. You have to understand that when your quack shrink or therapist says that you have bipolar, take this and get back to me in 3 years. You have this, take the med and come back to me in 3 years. Take 3-4 medications and come back to me in 2 years. That shrink is just basically a salesman for the drug company in most cases. And I'm warning you that you better be very, very thoughtful about whether you put yourself or your children on these drugs. If you want to talk about this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. And if you want to tie it into the death penalty, I want to go there as well. Because if ever someone deserved to be executed for a crime, and he's not the only one, it's Levy Aaron when he is tried and found guilty for having abducted, tied up, tortured, and then taken the kid apart. He was a former butcher. He cut him apart at the joints. You want me to spell it out for you? You want to get sick today? I couldn't sleep last night. A, it was a full moon. B, I will tell you that when I was a kid, I had several close calls that you can't believe them. I mean, we all have, you know, the cat has 9 lives. Have you ever thought about how many of the lives you've used up? I have. I think about it very often because I missed a few bad scenes when I was a kid. I mean, they affected me, but I got out of them. Let me put it to you that way. I'm not going to go into them. It's not your business. It's my karma, my fate. I mean, I remember being hit by a car once outside my cousin's house. I must have been 9 years old. And I remember the car fender hitting me. We were running after a ball. The guy stopped. I got bounced, I don't know, 20 feet. To this day, sometimes I have a fantasy that I actually died and all the rest was that I'm actually living in a dream or that this is hell. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's a moon out tonight. Let's go strolling.
Full moons freak me out. You get weird at full moons. You get, like, weirded out. I thought about it last night. I finally figured out why people get, like, weird around full moons. I didn't have to look it up on the internet. I was on my deck right over the bay looking at the moon, like, staring at it. Like, I can't sleep well. You get a little extra, like, edgy. Do you know why? You know why that? It's an adaptation. Take a guess. Would you turn it off already? They can't hear me and listen to that. Do you know why you get weirded out on full moons? Because in the ancient times, in your ancient days prior to civilization, you hunted on full moon nights because you had better light to hunt with. And so your perceptions were naturally raised during the full moon so that you could be a better, more proficient hunter. That's what I thought of last night as I stood there in my bathrobe staring at the full moon on the bay. Just me and Teddy. No, it makes sense, doesn't it? You see, at a certain point in your life, if you've spent your whole life digging and looking and trying to figure things out, you could actually answer questions that bewildered you before. And that's why I'm so good in the radio business. And that's why my audience is so loyal. In other words, I take complex questions that sometimes you can't find an answer to, and I give you an answer that makes sense. And you say, you know, that makes sense. So let's go back to the New York City story. The boy is abducted, tortured. We don't know what this son of a gun did to him tied him up with ropes. The poor little boy fought back, broke my heart. A little boy like this is a lamb, a little eight-year-old lamb, defenseless. He doesn't know how to defend himself. And this sadistic murderer then kills him, smothers him, and cuts him into pieces. And I'm asking you, why is this not a national story? The answer is because they're afraid the minorities will start screaming, oh, why are you covering him? Because he's white and he's Jewish? That's favoritism. So they've gone around the story. They're afraid of the minority reaction. Because everything now is seen through the filter of, I don't want to use the word political correctness because the word has been worn out. 10 years ago it was worn out. It's political suicide is what it is. It's PS. It's not PC. Okay? It's political suicide. You heard a sound by the beginning of the show where already Obama, how come he's being attacked like this, she says. Why? What's her name, Beowulf? I forget her name. Sheila Jackson Lee, one of the most, let us say, rotten people in the history. Isn't she? Didn't she get kicked out? Oh, she's still there. I didn't know she was still in there. And she's trying to imply that it's because of racism. And I'm saying, no, it's because he's a communist and he's incompetent. Other than that, what do you mean racism? Give me a black conservative like the guy who built up the pizza chain. You wouldn't hear this kind of talk because he knows how to run a pizza chain. Obama never ran anything. That's all. What do you mean, why? New York, hi, and welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I worked with the killer for a number of years. Truthfully speaking, the fact is that he was not a born Jew. He was born a Gentile, and he was converted. His parents...
Wait. Now, are you making this up on the spot in order to make the community feel better?
No. I'm telling you that this is inside information from the police. Okay? And it is going to come out.
Hold on a minute. Wait, let's stop for a minute. Because what you're saying is not verifiable. That's number one. But let's say what you're saying is true. But he was living inside the Orthodox community, wasn't he?
Oh, no doubt about it.
So he conducted himself in the manner of most people within the community, not perhaps the most religious, but certainly within the norm of average behavior. Is that correct?
Definitely. Not only
all right,
that.
So he was therefore, he was a member of the Orthodox community, irrespective of his genetic background. And my point is that the murderer came from within the community.
Yeah, definitely. Not only that, but a day after he abducted him, he came into work as if nothing. And when they did the afternoon prayers, he prayed along.
Unbelievable. Right. I mean, but you can't write it off by saying he wasn't really like us because he was not genetically like us, or he wasn't really like us. He was a Sephardic Jew as opposed to an Ashkenazi Jew. That starts to beg the question and becomes ludicrous, don't you think?
Definitely.
It's all right. The point is, watch out for your neighbor. They're not your friend. That's all. In fact, look into the Talmud, look into your own Talmud, and you'll find out that there were stories about Jews cheating Jews thousands of years ago. What do you think the whole Talmud's about? It was about within the Jewish community. There were people who did everything wrong on earth to each other. So what are you telling me this couldn't have happened? I mean, I don't understand the world that people are coming from. If you look at the Bible, the entire Bible, everything is about if a man takes a cow, if a man borrows your mule, and while he borrows the mule falls and breaks his leg. He who borrowed the mule with the broken leg must return a mule with four good legs, or something to that effect. So why was there a codification of law in the Jewish tradition? Because there were people who were no good thousands of years ago. And then you needed law to determine how to deal with the no-goodniks. It wasn't about outsiders. It was about Jew to Jew. If you sleep with them with this and that and look the other way, if you see your father's naked, if you see when your mother walks out, if her bathrobe falls open and you look, you shall lose your right eye. And I mean, it's unbelievable if you look at it. It was all about within the community behavior. Jewish to Jewish. So that's the rules were written for them. So don't tell me all of a sudden everyone's holy because they put on a black hat and a black a coat. They're suddenly holy men. That'll be ridiculous. There are good. There are bad. There are nice. There are nasty. There are evil. There are perverted. And there are psychotics in every community. And I've discovered that in all communities. And I think that the moral of the story, if there is one, is watch out. Just watch out. Because you cannot let your child walk alone in the street anywhere. Okay? That's what I'm saying. I don't care where you live. I don't care what your ethnic background is. Again, New York City, people are really hot on this story around New York, but they don't even know about it outside of New York. It's not being covered, even though it's bigger than Casey Anthony. Why is it bigger? It's not that this child was inherently more valuable than Kaylee Anthony. It's because he was tortured and butchered. The only reason it has no legs is because there is no mystery to the story. We more or less know who the villain is. So you can't exploit it in the same manner. Nevertheless, there are many aspects of the story that are absolutely worthy of discussion, especially if you have children and you're worried about this. You understand this? New York City, W.R. Hasita, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm an Orthodox Jew, not Hasidic, but Orthodox, and it has really shaken us to our core. And like you said, it is the enemy within, and you're saying, you know, why is everyone surprised? Obviously, every community has its crazy and sick people, but I think for us, we have three principles in our lives that we have to die for rather than break. One is adultery, the other is worshiping another god, and the third is murder. Being that if, you know, someone puts a gun to your head and says, shoot this person or I'll shoot you, you're supposed to allow yourself to be killed. And please.
Wait. I don't know which crazy rabbi told you that because he's wrong. That's his interpretation. That's insanity. That's total insanity because your survival should come ahead of anything in your life. Listen, a lot of what laws are taught in this community or any other are just taught by men who don't have perfect knowledge. Does that make sense to you? You should kill yourself first?
Yes, it does, because it shows the value of human life that you...
Oh, really? Then why don't you take the gun and kill the man who's telling you to kill the stranger? Say, sure, I'll kill them gladly. Give me the gun and turn it around and kill them. Why didn't your rabbi teach you that?
Who are you to decide which life is more valuable?
Well, good. Then relive that mentality led you to the box car. When I see those pictures of women, naked women holding babies being shot by those Nazi butchers, all I can think of is that the men failed them. The men failed them because they were so busy with their Torah that they didn't know how to defend themselves. Every Jew at 22. What the Jewish community ought to do is learn how to defend themselves. They ought to be teaching the boys how to conduct themselves with martial arts the way the Chinese did in monasteries. We're talking about law and order. We're talking about what's the lesson or what's the moral from the story of the killing of this little boy in Brooklyn by someone within his own community. The community was on guard for someone coming to harm them or their children from outside the community. They had patrols. They have police in front of their buildings. And they're afraid of the outsider. And where does the murderer come from, the sadistic murderer who does this to a boy? Within their own community. So what's the lesson? You can draw the lesson from it if you're open to it. Otherwise, you're going to repeat. It's going to happen again. Kansas City, John, you're on the Savage Nation.
The living legend, Michael Savage. I disagree with you.
I am only a living legend to my dog, Teddy, but what's on your mind today?
I listen to you every day while I'm working out, just to let you know that. But anyway.
Thank God.
I'd rather see... 100 guilty people, 100 of guilty people go free than see one innocent man die on death row.
That's now, wait. I've heard this before. This is standard liberal pap, that I'd rather see 99 guilty men go free than one innocent should be killed. I heard that before. Does that make sense to you? That's why America's rolling in the streets are filled with murderers and rapists and such. Is because the liberalism has distorted the mind of the people.
Yes, I've heard it a lot, too, but there's a lot of truth to that, Michael.
Nobody wants an innocent person to be incarcerated or to be executed, so let's start with that from the get-go. But there's a very low likelihood of that occurring today with DNA evidence and with the number of appeals. The fact is that we need to have quicker justice, we need to have shorter appeals, and we need to execute them in a less humane way, in my opinion.
I agree with you, but it's not going to happen. Look who's president right now. That is not.
Well, of course, we're not going to get anything on this issue from him. He's a social. Let's not go into Obama. He has nothing to do with this case at all. Thank God. Thank you for the call. Go back to your workout. Make sure your pecs, your abs, your labs. Do you have a lab? How are your labs? I mean, your. That's funny. Your pecs, your abs, your labs. You get mixed up with all of the Latin binomials. The pecs, the abs, the labs, the lats, not the labs. The labs are dogs, of course. Are your labs good? How good are your labs? Your water dogs. Your labs are water dogs. What do you want to talk about already? Were you exhausted this? We're finished? You want to be depressed today? You want me to entertain you with joyfulness? You want me to be let's play the soundbite of Debbie Kivel, the ex-wife of the alleged murderer, sadist. Listen to clip 9.
Well, the whole situation, I'm in shock. I can't believe it. It's definitely not in his character from ever what I knew, the person I knew. Even as I talked to him not long ago, everything was fine. You can't pass judgment until you know what happened. All we have to think about is there's a poor little boy there that needs a proper burial, and that he should get that with God's help. And whatever this other is, I have no doubt in my mind that the New York, Brooklyn, police department
will
be there.
What is this one on?
Whatever there's,
what's she on, moonshine? All right, turn this on. She's from Tennessee, right? An Orthodox Jewish woman in Tennessee. It sounds like she hit the moonshine before this conversation. What was she? It was like Slur City. I mean, it's early on a Friday. She couldn't hit the Manischewitz yet. What is this? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So what would you like to talk about? You want to talk about Obama saying 80% of the American people want to raise taxes when the number is actually, what, 18%? Yeah. Or Friday. What else is Friday? Open mic to Mike. Anything but a lifestyle. I don't want to do lifestyle. I may be a living legend, but I have my limits. And do you agree with me? No. I'm going to ask you a question. We're going to get the hunters calling. I don't want it. I'm going to start. Once you go down that road, you're finished with the reload and they start to the calibers and reloading. You're finished. There's four things you should never talk about in radio, which I'm not going to tell you because I'll help the young people compete with me. Four topics you can't touch. End of show. I learned it the first second in radio. I'll give you a hint. No, not giving you no hints. It's not your business. Figure it out for yourself. There's no room in this business for anyone new. It's over. The field is saturated. They're laying off national hosts around the country. They're going to local people they can hire for like minimum wage. It's going back to a record spinning days, like minimum wage. Do you remember what's his name? The great American actor, Clint Eastwood, in that movie, Play Misty for Me. Remember he plays a disc jockey in Monterey, California, in a small station? How cool was that one? He drove a Jaguar XK140 or 150. Remember, worked at a radio station at night, played records. That's the kind of world. That's what we're going back to again. You're going to just get stoners or alkies, drunks, just out of the can, who will take the job for minimum wage. They don't need talk show hosts anymore. The idea of talent, are you kidding me? You're going to pay somebody what they're worth? No, instead we'll just have foul-mouthed vermin on HBO mouthing off against the United States of America and pay them millions of dollars a year. That's what we need in the entertainment world. Thank God. Thank God. Thank God. Thank God. We live in paradise. No, we do live in paradise. We really do. It's Friday. You know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to give you an example. My night. Do you want to know this? Is it your business what I'm going to do? What do you care what I'm going to do? I'm going to eat again. I'm becoming obsessed. It's terrible. I don't know how I don't weigh 250 pounds. I don't understand this. A guy my size, with the amount of food I eat and my obsession with food, I should weigh 100 pounds more than I do. But I burn it off with anxiety and with worry and with work. It's a tremendous diet, by the way. And I eat high carbohydrates. I'm the only one who has a PhD in nutrition who actually is on a high-carb diet. Bread. I can't get it. I love bread. Oh, do I love bread and olive oil, bread and low-fat spread. While I'm waiting to eat, I have to have a piece of bread. Didn't hurt my mother. She lived to 88. Where did this insanity come from? Don't you remember the story, bread is the staff of life? How do you forget the basics of health? How do people forget the basics of health and become such lunatics? And now there's a high protein and no carbohydrate. Haven't they given up on that yet? Didn't they find that it causes kidney damage? All the nitrogen in your blood needs to be eliminated by the kidneys, so people having kidney damage from the high-protein diets? You need carbohydrates. Go out, have spaghetti, relax. Relax, because tomorrow may never come. What do you want to talk about? Religion? You want to do a little religion talk today? How about the prohibitions of the Bible? A little history would you like? Well, let me get out my... Hold on a minute. I'm looking for my history book. You want the history of anything horrible that happened in the past? When you look at the history of the world, do you realize how lucky you are? You're living in paradise in America. I don't care what your life is. I don't care how poor you are. You're living in paradise. Take a look at what happened in the Soviet Union when the Nazis invaded Russia and they were moving towards Moscow. Do you know that they took 2.5 million Russian men prisoner? Let me repeat that for you. When the Nazis were invading Russia, on their way to Moscow, when they were less than 50 miles away from Moscow, they had encircled an entire Russian army after killing God knows how many hundreds of thousands of millions. They took 2.5 million Russian men prisoner, and they marched them back to slave labor camps. No one ever returned, so about a few handful of men came back. The Russians lost millions of men in World War II. Millions, not tens of thousands. Millions of men. Millions of men were lost. Do you know what deprivation and starvation? Look at Stalingrad. I know it's ancient history. You don't want to know about it. But sometimes I have to remind myself and snap myself out of my own complaints, because we walk around, oh, this isn't right, that isn't right. Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to do this? Why am I involved with this? Why isn't this right? Why isn't that right? Well, will you remember the perspective of where we are in the history of the world? We're living in paradise. Admittedly, we have the most incompetent, corrupt administration in history. Yes. But I believe that the founding fathers were so brilliant that they anticipated a day that an imposter like this would wind up in the White House. The entire Constitution was written to protect the people from Obama. My belief is that the entire Constitution was written foreseeing the day that an imposter communist would take over the country, the White House, and try to impose his will on the people with every trick in the book. But to couple with that, you have a complacent a supine media like I've never seen. I watched Obama's press conference this morning. I had to stop eating. I have never seen anything like it. One loaded laugh, one loaded question after another. And the last question was saved for some stooge from NPR who basically gets up and says, Mr. Obama, do you have any hope that the Republicans will be nice? Listen to clip 15.
Can you share with us why you have some hope that the talks that have been going on might actually produce an outcome?
I always have hope. Don't you remember my campaign?
You hear? You hear the schmucks? These are our press. This is the press, national press, sitting there. He makes a stupid, tepid joke, and right away they're in laughter like the principal came into a classroom. I never saw anything like this. Where is the press? When did this happen? Where did the hardened reporters go? When did they disappear? When were they replaced by these sad sacks laughing at a president's tepid jokes when they should be the ones pressing him on saying, wait a minute, tell us why you're pushing raising taxes and spending more when it's not worked in East. It didn't work in Eastern Europe. Why are you trying to push that model on the American economy? You think one person would ask that question? They were all handpicked. They were all handpicked. So that's why it's hard for me to watch television at all anymore. I admit I watch too much television, but I can't watch the news at all. I can't even watch cable television news. You forget about it. I mean, even Fox, they do a fairly good job, but I can't even watch that. It is so cut and dry. There's no real emotion in it. There's no real gutsy opinion in it. It's all cut and dried. You know what I watch a lot on TV? I got to tell you. I watch movies. I admit it. Too many at night. I admit it. The clicker now has become like a second, third hand. Sorry. Can't help it. I'm entitled. Chinese food, Italian food, occasionally Indian food, and then the clicker. What can I do? I do ride the bike and go out on the boat, and I do look at the moon at night on a full moon night, and I do watch the birds, and I do know what a peregrine falcon looks like. But the fact of the matter is, far too many screens in my life. The computer all day with the call screeners. On my left side, I got a call screener that says, Tom from New York says Catholic saying. On the right side, I have the wires which show me all the websites and what's breaking, and then the dog is sleeping under the desk, and I leave here, I go home. About, I don't know how much time there is between now and when I watch television, but not, honest to God, it's getting it. I'm addicted to screens. And I was a guy who resisted all of these things. I'm addicted now. I'm a total addict. I am a total addict of the screen. There's nothing I can do. But, you know, you got to go with it. You know, as Aristotle and Onassis said, if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. I mean, the fact of the matter is I'm enjoying the internet more than ever. I don't feel guilty about it. Do you have internet guilt? Has anyone written that yet? Go steal my idea. Do any of you have internet guilt? Did you spend too much time on the computer, not enough time with your children? Or that you're spending more time on the computer than you are with your wife? Well, that you can understand. That's an old Henny Youngman joke. Even though there were no computers then. Same kind of thing. Take my wife, please. But the fact of the matter is, we're all addicted to the computer. If you have an IQ over 19, you're addicted to the computer. Let's say you meet someone who doesn't, he says he doesn't, I still meet people. I know a guy who's a lawyer. He just says, oh, no, I don't have internet. I don't go on. I don't have cell phone. I don't talk to him anymore. Who could know a person like this? What is that, like a reverse snobbery? I don't have internet. I don't do email. I don't do texting. I don't have a cell phone. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You heard that before. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You look at the news. U.S. formally recognizes Libya rebels. Do you know how insane this is? Do you have any idea who's running this country? That we would take the side of Islamists in Libya and send them money, hundreds of millions of dollars? Now, admittedly, Gaddafi's an evil man, but he's the devil we know, and he's not an Islamist. He's been fighting the Islamists for 40 years. Now we're taking the side of Islamists in, let's see, Morocco, Algeria, Libya, Egypt. Where else? Why are we taking the side of Islamists and Islamist-oriented parties in these countries? Answer, either they don't know what they're doing, or they're purposely undermining our support and our power in the world. It's really frightening, by the way. That's one of the biggest problems, is that the people don't even understand what side we should be on. Okay, they're just by the party line, which is Mubarak was a bad man, he was a dictator. Therefore, it's better to have the Muslim Brotherhood run the country. Unbelievable insanity, total insanity. Everywhere you turn, we have no leadership whatsoever. You don't know what's running the country, who's running the country, why they're running the country, what's in it for them. You know, you have no idea anymore under this man. And Congress is no better. Congress is no better, truthfully. So it's Friday night, right? It's Friday night. On the West Coast, it's like almost 4. On the East Coast, it's almost 7. Normal people are somewhere else already. If you're listening to this show, it means there's something wrong with you at this time of the day. There's something wrong in your life. If you've tuned into talk radio to listen to me, when you have internet and you have all these other choices, I'm not trying to send you away. It's not like I'm a bad businessman, but if you're listening to this show, it means that there's something a little off with you. I don't mean you're like the guy who did it in Brooklyn, don't get me wrong, but there's something wrong. You should normally be with a family tonight, breaking bread, children, but they don't talk to you. You don't have any family. That's why you're listening to the show. I'm family to you. I became the patriarch in your life. I am the father figure. I'm the uncle figure. I'm the lover figure. I'm the brother figure. I'm the son figure. I'm the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost figure. That's why I'm so popular. I fill all of these roles. I am everything, and I am nothing. And that's the beauty of radio. Did you know that that's the, did you see the, did you ever read the book, Miss Lonely Hearts? Is anyone, raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about. Miss Lonely Hearts. Written, I believe, by in the 19... I can't fill in the details. Beowulf, you're good on these things. Who wrote Miss Lonely Hearts and when?
Nathaniel West.
Nathaniel West. When, 1930?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Thereabouts. And it was about a... wasn't it about a newsman that people lived through? He had a column. He had a column for the lonely. And then, you know, he fulfilled all of these fantasies for people. And at the end of the book, he's swarmed by them like ants or bees, and they smother him to death. And that's what happens. So that's why I broadcast in isolation in a lone studio. And another reason I don't exercise very much anymore is because I work out on the radio. I found out a little trick, you don't realize it, with all the eating, why I didn't gain 100 pounds. Here's the answer. I do a little calisthenics in the morning and ride the bike a bit, but I've slacked off from my old exercise regimen. Who needs, I don't really care about it anymore. It's not like I've given up. Explain why. Like, I work in a studio that's about 10 by 12, right? When I came in the studio, no air conditioning, no ventilation. I didn't want it on because I don't like cold. The temperature in here was 64 degrees from the ambient air. I've been on the air about an hour now. The temperature is 69 degrees. I've increased the temperature in here by 5 degrees Fahrenheit. Where did it come from? Came from me. I generate so much energy on this show that it's like working out. It's like doing bench presses, labs, abs, whatever. And the fact of the matter is, my labs don't need to run around the lake. You know what I'm saying? That's a metaphor. I don't need to make my labs jump in the bay and chase a false fish. Because when I'm on the radio, I'm running basically, and I'm burning. I actually sweat at the end of a show. If you're not sweating and you're not exhausted, first rule of radio, if when you get off the air, you're not exhausted, you didn't do a good show. Did you know that? If you don't give it your all, you know what? Do me a favor, quit. You don't belong in this business. Give it your all. Stress yourself out. Push yourself. Dig within yourself. Come up with the best things you can. Do your work. raise your body temperature. Then you're going to do a show people will listen to. And if you're not exhausted, if you're just blowing it off, you know what? You're off the air. You're not going to last another year. I'm telling you, that's the way it is. So tonight, for example, I was telling you, it's a Friday, so I'm going to share. It'll be another full moon night. I'll be agitated anyway, so I'm not going to go to sleep. What's the point of going to sleep if I can't sleep, right? So I'm going to go to the San Francisco, to the North Beach area, to have Italian food because it's calamari night and codfish night in a certain restaurant I know. Now, I generally only eat in one Italian restaurant now, the North Beach restaurant. I mean, Lorenzo's a friend of mine. He and I like kibitz with each other all the time. I drive him crazy. He drives me crazy. He tries to put salt on my food. I mean, he drives me out of my mind. But I love the guy. I love the restaurant. But I hope he's not listening, God, because I'm not going there tonight. I don't go anywhere else. I do not recommend any other restaurant anymore in the city. No more Italian, nothing. End of story. Don't go anywhere else. Only go there. You'll never find me there because I'm never there. But I'm going to be in the area. If you're looking for me, you'll not find me. But I'm going to go where they serve calamari tonight and codfish. They make a codfish. Oh, my God. And then I'll walk around the streets looking at the lunatics. We call the city at this time of year the Redneck Riviera. Old story, but it is. Nothing wrong with it. I mean, if you like the wife beater guys in the fog with the girls walking around with the jelly rolls underneath their pants. That's very with the tight pants that Laura talked. That's a terrific place to see all of them. They don't know what they're looking at. And the Europeans are there shivering as usual in the summertime. They think they were going to Mexico. They're going to California. They're going to put on shorts and they walk around the blonde hair standing up because it's like on the steps of Russia in 1941. They don't understand what Mark Twain said. The coldest winter, hottest summer, you know that one. I never spent the colder winter than the summer in San Francisco. It's true, and thank God that's why I live here. But I enjoy it. I wear an overcoat and a hat and a scarf. I like to see them shiver. Not because I'm sadistic. It's just one of the quirks of life.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
When I was talking to the mother and father on the phone, I said, you know, I can't explain why God does this. But, you know, fortunately for society, the last time something like this happened was 30 years ago. So, you know, are you safe going out there and safe letting your kids out? Yes.
We had a mayor as disastrous as him in New York was with Lindsay 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Look what he's talking about. Yes, safe. No, it's not. Oh, sure, it's safe. Yeah, it's safe. Oh, yeah, something's wrong out there. Play the music again. I don't want to talk yet. I have a slight migraine starting on the left side, which is unusual because of the moon. I don't know. Something's wrong with me. I feel good. This is frightening. When I feel good, I get very frightened. I'm like used to not feeling good. I committed myself to not feeling good. Many years ago, I learned to not feel good and enjoy it. It's a very interesting thing. It's like years ago, as a child, you're told to expect, like, you know, roses. But then you realize life is terrible. It's hell. You're going to walk on glass. Nothing's going to work out. But you have to keep struggling. You don't give up. Because out of pride, you don't give up. Then if you have children, you don't give up for them. You need to be a role model. So here I am working many years after I should have stopped working. And I normally don't feel good, generally. I'm not a person who feels good. The world's a horrible place. It's worse than ever. We have an imposter Marxist in the White House who wants to raise taxes on men like me and give more to the bums and the leeches. Why shouldn't the age of Social Security be raised to retirement? Why shouldn't they retire 2 years later? You know, you want to ask me, I'll get 2 cents plain. Raise the retirement age by 2 years and then increase co-payments on Medicare to $20 a visit. Hundreds of billions of dollars immediately. Why? If you give a person unlimited health care, any kind of doctor, specialist, double specialist, you can go anytime you want. It's your right. It's your duty. It's your entitlement. Of course they're going to go. Why wouldn't you go? Especially if you're retired, let's say you got nothing to do. You can't stand your husband or your wife. That's if you're still married. So you get to see a nice-looking young doctor who pays attention to you and touches you inappropriately, irrespective of if it's an instrument. Still, you're getting touched. It's something. And they ask you how you are, even if it's for 6 minutes. At least you're getting something. And you go to 3-4 of them a week. Some use 2-3 a day, by the way, because it's for free. It's called recreational illness. I wrote about this in 1981 in a book called The Skeptical Nutritionist. I'm always 20, 30 years ahead of my time. So if you got recreationally ill people, they make themselves sick. I got a complaint here in my back. Explain exactly how it feels. I felt a transient ischemia. They read the literature, by the way. They know exactly how to con the doctor. They get the few words they throw in. Oh, you know the word ischemia, really. How'd you learn that, man? Well, I didn't go to medical school exactly, but I would have been a great doctor. You know, it's like people who think they can be a lawyer. You ever meet those people? Oh, my God. I don't know the most anything. Let us say some of the stupidest people I ever met are those who said, what a great lawyer I would have been. I can't believe them. You know what it is to really be a lawyer, a top lawyer? It's not them. But it's the same with the doctor. Only a fool would be his own doctor. That's number one. But to get back to the point, you raise the retirement age 2 years, and you make them pay $20 co-payment, hundreds of billions of dollars right there. Why should you not do that? Of course, if you give them unlimited medical care with any specialist they want, they're going to abuse it because there's no consequences for it. 1-800-449-8255 or michaelsavage.com. There's other news. Here's a headline. Liberal group threatens to pull Obama support. And these are people who are saying that if he cuts Medicare or Social Security, they're going to pull their support. 200,000 people because they like the freebies. They love the freebies. Here's one who said, I don't know who I'm going to vote for yet because there doesn't seem to be too many people on the horizon, but I will vote for someone, whether it's a green candidate, whether it's a communist, I don't care. Somebody's going to stand up for people. Well, Hitler stood up for the German people. Stalin stood up for the Russian people. Mussolini stood up for the average Italian. So this is what you get now, liberal fascism. This is who they are. You got liberal fascists in the gutter now, saying don't you dare cut the so-called entitlements. There's no such thing as a free lunch, and there's no such thing as an entitlement. You're taking those entitlements out of my pocket because I'm working and you're not, you bum. You're a bum. You're a bum. Why don't you go to work if you want more medical care for free? And why don't you go to work again if you're so desirous of freebies? But I'm not in charge. I'm only a talk show host. Make healthy smoothies with real fruit and live active yogurt cultures. That's all. Make healthy smoothies. A society looking for smoothies. You know, any adult, I'm sorry, who drinks a smoothie, I don't trust them. I don't trust men who make smoothies. Did you know that? Any man who says, come in my house for a smoothie, I don't go in there. Would you go to a man's house and make smoothies? I don't even like the word smoothie. Smoothie unto itself sounds creepy. Does it not? I'm serious, honestly. I'm not picking on a particular kind of yogurt, but if a grown man offers you a smoothie, would you accept it? It could have like a roofie in it. Why, just because it's a smoothie? It's the same thing. In other words, you know not to go in a bar and drink a drink that a stranger gave you because he could throw a roofie, a roofie. The date rape drug. But you would not expect a roofie to be thrown into a smoothie in a health food store, would you? But that's where it's going to come from next. And it goes back to that murder in the Orthodox Jewish community. It came from a smoothie within the community, in essence. It didn't come from outside in some evil bar, let's say, on 8th Avenue. Or someone went out in 10th Avenue. She left the community and she got raped. They'd say she took off the wig and she put on the high heels and ran around with. It's not that they would say good. They'd say terrible thing, but what'd you expect when she did that? Well, what'd you expect here? The kid was walking in his own neighborhood? Chris in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, you're absolutely right about the smoothie. I go for a good chocolate egg cream myself.
I don't eat a chocolate egg cream for a number of reasons. It killed all my relatives, but go on, please.
Well, you know, I live in Brooklyn, and a lot of my neighbors are.
I'm sorry to hear it. And there
is a level of false security. I mean, there's an insulation that they live with. You know, I often see a lot of the children, walking around on their own. Sometimes you even see them waiting.
Oh, you mean in the Orthodox Jewish community, they feel that they can't be touched?
It often seems that way. And one of the things that I had read in one of the daily rags here in the city was about how there was an approximately three-hour delay by the time Shoreham, who is the local public safety for the community, and contacting the police department. And, you know, that's a long time, whether it was an hour or 3 hours.
You mean they were looking for him within their own security services? I understand there was a search by community members, and one of them actually found the murderer. It wasn't the police who did it. It was him. He did a search on the Internet. Did you know that 30 or 40 Pakistanis joined in the search for the kid? Did you know that?
I wouldn't be surprised. I know a lot.
There's a large Arab community adjacent to the Jewish community, and 30 or 40 Pakistani Muslims joined in the search for that little boy. I mean, that's a side text to the story. It's a very important side note, by the way, and it's a very promising note in the midst of this tragedy to see that, incidentally. They should get credit for that. Even though the outcome was still, you know, horrendous. All I'm thinking about is the calamari now. You see, it's terrible. Is the calamari and the codfish. I'm tossing up in my head. That's why I'm distracted. I cannot decide when I go to this restaurant tonight whether I should have it. It's Friday. It's a very big conflict. It's calamari day and it's codfish day. So I'm adding up whether I have the calamari, which I love, or the codfish. I'm going to go with the codfish because the calamari is fried and I don't like it. It's dipped in batter and the batter has milk. I don't want it. And it's fried. The codfish, on the other hand, is all omega-3s. They have a tomato sauce on it. Forget about it. With one beer. I don't even want to drink wine. I need bad wine to pretend I'm sophisticated. Tyler, Texas. Is this Tina? Tina. Welcome to the program.
Yes, it is. Michael, you had mentioned that people that listen to your show at this time, there's probably something wrong with them. And you are probably right. I find that being my age, I'm a young 48. I began listening to you when I was 30-something. And the very first thing that I heard, I didn't even know your name, but I turned the radio on, and there was this booming voice that was so pleasant. And you said the funniest thing. You said, you would rather see a Texas girl getting out of a truck than a liberal woman driving a Pinto with a mustache. And
That's funny.
I laughed, and you had me from there. I was absolutely...
Well, in San Francisco, if a woman doesn't have a mustache, she's called in for questioning by the police department.
Oh, let me tell you, I told my husband, because, face it, I'm a beautiful girl, as a lot of Texas women are. We take pride in the way we look. I drive an Escalade and I drive a truck. I wear jeans and I wear boots and I wear pearls and dresses. So I'm very comfortable with who I am. But I find that a lot of people my age, especially women, they irritate me because they are not very intelligent. Now, I have a high school education, that's all. I haven't gone to college. And I find you so intriguing and so interesting, not intimidating in any kind of way. And sometimes I get mad at you at some of the things you say politically because I'm one of those real far, far right. But yet I tell my husband, I said, you know, I may go to bed being mad at Michael, but I wake up loving him every day.
Well, you're saying I'm too liberal for you, in other words.
No, not always. In some things you are. Sometimes you can be a little harsh, but that's just because sometimes...
What is the most liberal thinking I have ever projected on my show?
Sometimes...
Let's say something you would have problems with as a right-wing Texas girl. What have I said that strikes you as too liberal? Does it come to mind?
Sometimes some of your religious point of views, because you're very... You read a lot from the Old Testament, and I know you're very schooled in that, and I'm a Christian... and some of the things you say I agree with, and some of them I really don't.
I don't understand. So which, like what from the Old Testament offended you? I'd like to know. I'd like to hear.
I really can't say that it offended me so much. It just...
What, you shall not eat shrimp or pork or something? I didn't say.
No, I do that too.
I don't care what you eat. You can eat pork. You know, the Chinese are releasing pork stores. The price of pork went up 38%. The Chinese are releasing pork bellies now on the world market because the price of pig has gone up. But that's a side note. Well, I'm glad you're still listening after 18 years. So you're 48. You started listening to me at 30?
Yeah, so 40 something. I was in my late 30s.
And were you married? Were you already married at that time?
I was just getting married. And
now, wait. This is very important. Does your husband know you listen to the Savage Nation?
All the time. Oh, as a matter of fact, he was listening to you last night, and he comes in and he goes, "Did you hear what Michael said?" And I said, "Yes." And he is in total agreement.
No, it's a great state. Texas is a great state. If you had fog, like I have here, I'd move there in a minute. But I can't move to any place without fog. It's that simple. I love people from Texas. It's a great state. Forget the no tax. That's an issue. Sure. It's very business friendly. California's bleeding businesses that are running out of the state. They're moving to Texas, Utah, and places where their taxes are lower and people are, first of all, you have a better workforce there. They're politer. They know what work is. It's a disaster here to run a business. But because you don't have any fog in Corpus Christi, I cannot move there. Thank you for the call. And secondly, if you go in, like if I go to, let's say, Texas, for example, I wouldn't fit in anywhere. Wherever I go, I don't fit in. I'm a loner, so I don't fit in anywhere. For example, let's say I go into a restaurant there. You think I'm going to fit in? I once went with a friend to upstate California. They don't call it upstate here, but it was way upstate. It was halfway to the Oregon border. He has 100 acres up there. And I figured, all right, I would like it. It would be something like upstate New York, and I'd have some nostalgia. It was a summer many years ago. I go into a local restaurant. Do you know what they had, like, serving me? I mean, you ask for a cappuccino. They never heard of it. At least it was that time. They had a, you know, black coffee. They looked at you like you were Kami Pinko, like a deviant, if you asked for anything but black coffee. Then I asked for dinner. They had, like, frozen veal steaks that came out frozen in a box. I said, no amount of acreage is worth it to me. You know what I'm saying? So I ran back to the city with the Pinkos and the green hair. Because I must have a certain degree of like creature comforts, or else I can't live there. That's all there is to it. So it's open mic to mic day on the Savage Nation. We can talk about anything from the spread of Islam in the ancient world to Plato's Republic to the empire of Alexander the Great when I return right here on the Savage Nation. Savage.
I want to commend the president. I have never seen. Job is no place compared to this president in terms of patience. He doesn't even begin. Because this president has demonstrated a level of patience, not only during the meetings, but as respectful of the suggestions that are made by all parties at the meeting in his preparation for the meeting.
No, get off the stage. You know, Nancy, you know who has the patience of Job? The American people. We put up with you for years with your gavel and your gaffes, your imperiousness, your arrogance, your dictatorial nature. No, we have the patience of Job, not the president. Don't give us this malarkey. You know what Jesus said? Jesus said it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Right? And what Michael Savage said with regard to that, for those of you who think I'm a communist, you're wrong. Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God, right? My answer is it depends on the size of the camel, the size of the needle, and the morals of the rich man, Michael Savage. And Jesus looked around about and saith unto his disciples, how hardly shall they that have riches enter into the kingdom of God? And the disciples were astonished at his words. But Jesus answereth again and saith unto them, children, how hard it is it for them that trust in riches to enter into the kingdom of God. It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. And as I say, that depends upon a number of things. The size of the camel, the size of the needle, and the morals of the rich man. Because not all rich are evil, and not all poor are good. Moreover, those, in my opinion, who are the most corrupt in Congress are calling for raising taxes on the evil rich and the oil companies, which is utterly unbelievable. On Monday, they go to the oil companies and they collect money for their campaigns, and on Tuesday, they attack the oil companies. On Wednesday, they go to a meeting in Wall Street. They sit with the most corrupt hedge fund operators in the history of the world, the people who bankrupted America. And on Thursday, they then attack the hedge fund operators. So if you believe a word coming out of their mouths, it is easier for a camel to walk through the eye of your nostril than for me to believe a word you say.
Savage.
Welcome back. Welcome back. That Cannibal Adelaide this year. When I was a kid, I know you want to talk about the debt limit. And you want to talk about the impossible stupidity of Representative Sheila Jackson Lee D. Texas saying that Obama's being opposed on the debt ceiling because he's black, which is just unbelievable. Well, of course, if you use the race card, you keep using it. You don't stop. Look how far they've gotten with it. I mean, Obama and Sheila Jackson Lee. You intimidate people by threatening them with that. But no, the reason that he's opposed on it is because he's bankrupted America. He's a communist, politically a communist, and he's incompetent. That's the reason he's being opposed, not because he's black. You give me the gentleman who is black, who his name is Kane. He created Godfather Pizza. He was the CEO. He's a conservative. We wouldn't oppose him because he would rein in the spending. Then what are you going to say? He's reining in the spending because he's black, or he's reining in the spending because he's a fiscal conservative? You see, it has nothing to do with race. It has to do with policy. So we have a communist president, so that's why we oppose him. But don't explain that to Sheila Jackson Lee, which is why I want to go back to Nat Cannonball Adderley. So play the song again, just for a minute. So I take you back in time. It's a little history on it. That's enough already. Now it's hysterical. It's not the good part. That already got my father crazy. He'd come home from work, you see, and I was a kid in high school, and I discovered jazz. And my mother was a little more, you know, progressive in that regard, not the liberal progressive. She dared buy a blonde cabineted hi-fi stereo, and he was so mad that she had bought a hi-fi because it was modern. He didn't like modern. He wanted something that he got like in a secondhand store that was made of tremendous parts. The sound might not have been, you know, so like he was always interested. Like, you know, he was frugal. I mean, he's from it. He had to say. So she got this hi-fi cabinet, and here's this kid gets the record, Nat Cannonball Adderley, and I'm listening to this. He comes home from work. White again from the market. I don't know, it was the snow. I don't know what time of year it was. And here's his nightmare son listening to jazz music. And he figures I'll amount to nothing because, oh my God, can you imagine him listening to jazz? So I said, hey, Dad, what's wrong? That's not music for you. I said, what do you mean it's not music for me? You don't listen to music like that. I said, why don't I listen to music? I like that music. It's not music for you. It went on and on how it would destroy my mind. Well, it hasn't destroyed it yet. I mean, I've, you know, got a couple of higher degrees, written 28 books, and I have a great career, a great family. What do you mean? Didn't destroy my mind. But it just shows you how people get locked into their view of the world. And it's the same with Jackson Lee and Obama. Since she has used the race card, no, let's put it another. Since she sees the world only through the race card or through racial lenses, she always has the attitude that whenever a black person is opposed on any issue, it's because they're black. It could be because of something they did, or in this case, it could be because what Obama is trying to do is beyond belief. Raise taxes and increase spending? It's the reverse of what works in the real world, Sheila Jackson Lee. But again, she says that Congress is complicating the debt ceiling because Obama is black. Astounding, isn't it? So now, having said that, we can go on to the callers. New York, WOR, Rachel, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. I'm a really big fan of yours, listening to you from when I was in high school.
Are you still allowed to listen, even though you're an Orthodox Jew? Isn't it sundown yet in New York?
Not yet. I still have some time.
So you're allowed to listen to the radio. As an Orthodox religious person, you can't watch TV, right?
You know, I would say that what goes on television today is even for the average person.
Oh, but are you allowed to watch television? Like, could you watch Lawrence Welk reruns or something like that? But radio you can listen to?
We could listen to radio that's appropriate, and, you know, obviously you're appropriate.
Am I considered kosher? Can you listen to me? Am I allowed to be listened to by religious Jews?
Most of the time.
You actually go to rabbis and ask if what I said was allowed to be heard?
No, I don't. But I know many,
who's getting big play playing the Jews for suckers? Glenn Beck with the Israel thing. I mean, you talk about cynicism. This guy's using the entire state of Israel to promote his career. Have you seen anything like this?
Yeah, I really called you about a different issue. You had mentioned...
I know. I'm trying to avoid the butchering of the boy, but go ahead. I knew we'd get back to it. Tell us.
It just didn't sit well with me because I agree with most of what you say, and I felt like it was important enough that I had to wait. And
go ahead. No, go ahead. Disagree with me. We're human beings. We're allowed to disagree. What did I say that offended thee?
You said that we hate the outside world. Our community hates.
Did I say hate? Did I use the word hate? Did I use the word hate? I said the Orthodox Jewish communities are insular and they distrust the outside world. I believe that is exactly what I said.
I thought you said the word hate, and I want.
I don't believe so. I think that maybe I said despise because it's true. Don't you despise the outside world?
I think that being that we live in such crazy times, that we have to be more wary. But I wouldn't say that we hate the outside
world. Well, then I'm more conservative than you because I despise the outside world.
It depends who.
I live in my own world. I mean, I stay at home most of the time with my dog. I look at nature. I work on my books and my show. And I try to avoid people. Does that make me crazy, or does that make me a wise man?
Well, I think you're a wise man.
Well, look. There's going to be things I say that offend you, and that's because we're human beings, and no one's going to say what's exactly in your own head about things. But all insular communities, whether it be the Orthodox Jewish communities in Brooklyn, where this tragedy occurred, or Amish people. I mean, take any insular community you want, the Arab community in Dearborn. They look at the outside world with suspicion and with contempt. They all do. This is what unifies their communities. Look, I've studied this in great detail. One of the things that unifies religious Jews is the Bible, right? The Torah, the rules and regulations, including what to eat, what not to eat, correct?
Right.
Okay, well, all these rules were set up in order to keep the community cohesive. And it's not so much that if you eat a shrimp, you're going to die. The rules say don't eat a shrimp. In those days, it made sense because the shrimp were probably, they had toxins from the red tide or whatever it was. As far as pork goes, why do you think that the Jewish people are told not to eat pork? Why is the pig unclean?
Is unclean because the pig itself represents like unfine qualities.
Right. Okay. The actions of the pig rolling in the mud and then laying in the dirt. So you look upon that and it's something you think that. Do you think that the individual who eats pork is going to become like the pig? Is that the implication? Is that the thought?
I don't know if they're going to become exactly like the pig, but we don't want to.
This is a very interesting discussion. I've never actually had this. Because if you take out the religious connotations of this discussion, I once spoke to a health, like a 60s new age health guy who said to me, don't eat chicken or you'll start to look like a chicken. And it's true. Most of the people who live on chicken have fat behinds. A lot of people who eat chicken start to actually take on the body form of a chicken. So he said, eat fish because you look like the fish. That's a separate story. It's almost like the doctrine of signatures. It really has no bearing upon it. But actually, if you look at it, people who eat a lot of chicken tend to have fat behinds. They're like waddle around like a chicken. But that's not why the Bible says don't eat pork. It's because in the ancient days, there was no refrigeration or preservatives other than salt. And usually pork had there were sufficient cases of trichinosis from pork that it was banned as a food. I don't think inherently the pig is dirtier than some of the other animals that people eat. Do you?
If it's inherently dirtier,
After the animal is slaughtered, the animal is as clean as a cow. After the pig is slaughtered in today's marketplace, the pig is as clean as a cow. The poor cow isn't any cleaner than a pig. It doesn't mean I'm suggesting that. I'm not trying to twist your brain into going out and having a fried pork sandwich in Monticello. I didn't say go out and have fried pork on a garlic bread. What I'm saying is if your religion says don't eat it, don't eat it. But you have to look at why and at what time that rule was written. Now, I understand. See, this is the problem with Orthodox religions in general. Because once you unravel one rule, and I've heard this from religious men, which rules are you going to decide not to listen to? And I've heard this from religious men. They weren't arguing. They were saying you start to unravel one rule, you may as well not respect any of them. And then you're no longer going to follow any of the rules and you're no longer a Jew. I've heard that. So follow the rules that your religion teaches you. That's what I say. But you have to understand that many of the rules were written at a time when they made more sense than they do today, as far as I can tell. So it's very, and by the way, it's very complicated to start interpreting for yourself which to follow, which not to follow. It's actually easy to follow the rules because there's less thinking involved. And it's all right, I don't need it anyway. Who needed it? It's trash. I don't want it. I'm not going to miss pork. I'm not going to eat ham and eggs. I don't need it. What else? You know, I eat a shrimp. All right, so they like a shrimp sandwich. I don't eat it. I don't need it. I'm not missing anything. I don't want it. And you're probably right. I mean, shrimp today, most of it comes from Vietnam. It's not a healthful food. People use the wrong word by the way. They say healthy food. I'm not interested if the shrimp was healthy. I'm interested if it makes me. It's healthful is the word you want to use. By the way, talking about words. I remember learning that 20 years ago. It's a tricky word, healthy and healthful. A lot of the mistakes come from the advertising industry where adults work. Anyone who can't be a novelist becomes an advertising executive. And short of that, they go to work as a speechwriter for a politician. But anyway, you don't say this meal is healthy. You're not interested in the health of the meal. How can a meal be healthy? The meal is healthful. You mean it's full of health. But that's neither here nor there. It's a semantic issue. What I'm saying is, if you like a shrimp, eat a shrimp. But I don't eat them anyway anymore. They're filthy, dirty little animals. They're bottom feeders. The same with calamari I talk about. I don't eat it anymore. You can't get it from Monterey. I used to eat it from Monterey, California, because the water was clean. You think I eat calamari anymore? It comes from Korea. Do you have any idea what that food is like? What kind of sea are they capturing it in, the shellfish today? And a lot of people get mad when I say it because a lot of Italians eat the shellfish, the calamari, the this, the that. And believe me, I loved it as much as anybody. But today, where do you think it's coming from? It's not your grandfather's calamari. That's a funny line, by the way. It's not your grandfather's calamari. It's really true. I mean, when your grandfather ate calamari, maybe it didn't come from polluted water, you know, like where it comes from today, to the squid. Secondly, whatever. I don't want to go into it. But the shellfish thing is an issue to begin with. I don't eat any hard-shelled shellfish at all anymore. It's all from most of it's from Asia today. Okay, some of it comes from Boston. Do you actually want to eat something that comes from the waters of Boston where Ted Kennedy's waste? You know what I'm saying? Follow it in that way. I'm just using a metaphor. Let's say people like Ted Kennedy, their waste goes, the effluence into the bay, and then you're eating the shellfish. Can you imagine that? All the liberals in Boston, think about it. The sewage and then the shellfish. Do you actually want to eat shellfish from Boston? Think about what I just said to you. It doesn't mean that a conservative area with effluence into the beds of the seafood would be cleaner. I'm just saying, this is what they live on. They were on the bottom. It's disgusting. So it leads you, at the end of the day, what are you supposed to eat? Stella D'Oro pastries and get diabetes? Is that kosher? Do you want to hear something funny? Many years ago, I got so obsessed with this topic with regard to Jewish legal prohibitions on food that I wrote an interesting nutrition article where I said, is kosher junk food Yiddishkeit? That's for the Jewish audience that's listening now, because my argument was, I don't care what your religion is kosher junk food Yiddishkeit? In other words, you're still eating garbage. Just because someone spit on it in a factory and said that this sugary food is kosher, that means it's good for you. It doesn't mean it's good for you. It's still poison. So you have to start to use common sense at a certain point. You understand that I wrote that article 30 years ago, went over everyone's head, under everyone's head, around everyone's head, through everyone's head, but it had no impact whatsoever. I shouldn't have said it because Glenn Beck will quote it sometime in Jerusalem during the rally and say that God spoke to him specifically to tell you about it. And I'm the Messiah. I've come to save the Jews. I'm a righteous Gentile. And you can sign up right here and get on my network. If I can get all the millions of Jews in Israel to sign onto my network, think of how far ahead of the curve I'm. Unbelievable. It worked the Mormon. Now he's working the Jews in Israel. This guy's clever. You got to hand it to him. Thrown off Fox? Yes. Then, okay, the blackboard and the glasses, they had their limit. But now, first he worked the Mormon community, and now he's working the Jewish community. And they fall for it, too. Amazing. I got to tip my hat to him. I tip my hat to a con. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, it's interesting. There was once a law and order president named Richard Nixon, and America responded to him at that time. Forget about, you know, what he did and didn't do. When have you last heard either party talk about law and order? Zero, nothing, never. Any social issues? Zero, nothing, never. They're only obsessed with the budget, which, of course, is paramount in some regard. But when a nation loses, you know, what did Jesus say again? What does it profit the man if he gaineth the world and loseth his soul? America's lost its soul. Precisely because our so-called leaders will not talk about social issues such as family values, such as law and order, such as crime and punishment. which is why I am talking about these issues on a regular basis on the Savage Nation. I am filling in the void that is missing. I've taken it upon myself. And I want you to remember something. We talked about one of the most horrendous crimes you could imagine, kidnapping a kid, tying him up, torturing him, and dismembering him. But I want to remind you that the greatest crimes are not committed for the sake of necessities. Remember what I just said. Men do not become tyrants in order to avoid exposure to the cold. The greatest crimes are committed not for the sake of necessities. Men do not become tyrants in order to avoid exposure to the cold or because they're hungry. And that's why the crime of the tyrant is the greatest. And that is why we have to not lose the forest for the trees. You understand what I'm saying to you? We have a tyrant in the White House. Right now, he's a junior tyrant. He's not grown into a full-size tyrant because of the geniuses called the ancient white males, the old white males who created this thing called the checks and balances of the Constitution. And I believe that they created the U.S. Constitution with its checks and balances and protections thereof, specifically for the day that a man like Obama would arrive in the White House. He is by no means the first man who wished to be a tyrant, but he certainly does exemplify tyrannical, let us say, inclinations. Look how he's pouting now that he can't get his way. Look how he's threatening now that he can't get his way with satisfying the deadbeat class. The deadbeat class. Why do I say the deadbeat class? Here's Sheila Jackson Lee implying that Congress is complicating the debt ceiling because Obama's black, which is absurd. Just absolutely crazy. It's totally insane. Here's a woman who represents many people who don't pay taxes at all. Here's a party, the Democrats, that represent the majority of people who don't pay taxes at all. That's 80% of the people don't pay any taxes at all. 45% of the people in the U.S. don't pay a dime, right? 45% of the people in the United States don't pay a dime. And of course they want taxes increased. It doesn't affect them. That's why they're screaming, tax, 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 spend, spend, spend. I also want to remind you that the largest deficit Bush ever ran was $428 billion, $2 trillion over 8 years. That's very high, but we had two wars. That was to be expected. He was also a big government Republican. But if you look at the 3 years that Obama's been in power, he's nearly tripled Bush's largest deficit every year. That's every year. That's roughly $4 trillion in deficits in 3 years. Oh, taking away your checkbook. We are cutting up your credit cards. No more taxes. Cut the spending. Cut the spending, cut the spending, cut the spending, balance the budget. Tax code is not the way to do it. Don't balance the tax code on the backs of those who are still working. Don't use the race card, whatever you do. No more race card. Okay? I'm sick of it. It doesn't work anymore. Middle class blacks don't like it. It embarrasses them. They don't want to hear Sheila Jackson Lee throwing out the race card. It's absurd. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Now, on my website, michaelsavage.com, I have to plug the website because I didn't get to most of the stories as I normally don't. I get distracted and I start telling you. The top story on the left is Assad kills another 20 protesters and the United Nations yawns. Hundreds of thousands of Syrians have mounted the largest protest since the uprising began 4 months ago. Have you read about it? No. He killed another 20 protesters. What is the UN doing? Looking for hookers on East End Avenue. What is the UN doing? Importing sex slaves from Hungary. What is the UN doing? Seeing if they can pass another anti-US, anti-Israel bill over there in the UN. Assad killed another 20 protesters. Why are we not using airplanes from NATO to stop Assad? Why are we instead attacking Gaddafi? Figure it out. Ask Hillary Clinton why she supports the Islamists in Libya, the Islamists in Egypt, and why she does nothing about the killings in Syria. Very big story. You won't read it in tomorrow's newspaper.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And the news. Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com. He tortured and butchered an innocent boy. The question is, this boy was dismembered by this sicko, and the media has dropped the story. Why? We're talking about that in the Savage Nation. Savage Audio, beware of the government media complex. It's on MichaelSavage.com. Return of the gold standard as world order unravels. That's a huge story. California orders gay history in school textbooks. China is teaching them math, science, space technology, and we're teaching them about Harvey Milk. Tell me who wins this battle. Illegal working inside Arizona nuclear plant arrested. A man was deported in the year 2000. He paid a coyote for reentry into the U.S. Thank you, Obama. Murdoch's American media empire could unravel, says the left-wing London Telegraph. Man hit by lightning dies 48 years after his dad died exactly the same way, exactly on the same day 48 years before. Oh, God. Study says black men live longer in prison than outside. Tourists saw California man fall into Maui blowhole. What a way to die. The German miracle that Obama doesn't see. Very important you read it on my website. Girl with no arms and legs says cheerleading tryout is unfair. Okay. Next we'll have blind pilots with a blind government suing the airlines for not hiring a blind pilot. It's interesting. It said, the news story said a 24-year-old Baltimore man tried to board a flight with 13 knives packed in his carry-on, but he was a Muslim man. So my headline's a little different than that. It says Muslim does dry run, boards plane with 13 knives. I guess they sent the information back to a cave and said they caught me. What else is on MichaelSavage.com? America's most expensive home has a new billionaire owner. It's an interesting story if you're into the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Harvard researchers want fat kids taken from their homes. That's nonsense. What's not nonsense is identity theft. Someone stealing your credit cards and try to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485. You get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-562-5485. Write it down. Call now, 1-800-LOCK-485. Most violent job in Washington State, nurse's aide, not cop. Can you believe what's going on in your world that a nurse's aide is at a greater risk? The debt debate is going on. Debt debate is going on, and Obama has a captive audience called the U.S. press who asked shill questions, lied his way through the press conference where he said 80% of Americans want higher taxes when the actual poll numbers show 34% are supporting tax hikes, not 80%. But then again, what do you expect from a serial liar? I mean, a president, pardon me. What else do we see? 1-800-449-8255. Murdoch is in the tailspin. Rebecca resigns. A Saudi said that she must go. Murdoch says we are sorry. Meets family of murdered schoolgirl hacked by News of the World. Interesting. How do you like that? It's an interesting story. I mean, will it affect the people on Fox News? Really, in a way, I hope not. Yeah, sure, I hope not. Will it affect Leprechaun? Will it affect Wallbanger? Will it affect Scarface? I don't know. If I were them, I wouldn't be worried too much. The American people are in love with them. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. All these stories and more right here on my radio show, on my website. There's a lot of stories I haven't touched yet, but you really have to look at them from the perspective of what you think is going on in the world, and you'll find out that what you think is going on in the world is nothing compared to what the people who run the newspaper business think. Cyclist runs red light, injures woman. That's in the San Francisco newspaper. Actually, I almost got killed on the same embarcadero, remember, a few months ago? A woman crossing a street in the San Francisco's waterfront was struck and seriously injured by a bicyclist who ran a red light. A woman in her 60s was crossing Embarcadero when she was hit by the northbound bicyclist at 8:30 a.m. Yeah, well, I almost got hit by one. Almost killed. It's unbelievable what these lunatics do. And I'm a bicyclist. Needless to say, I'd try to not cross that street anymore. British heiress, age 22, buys the $85 million Spelling Mansion. Ooh, it's on Michael Savage. You can see the pictures of her house, if you like. It's all about wine tasting, if you live in San Francisco. And I mean W-H-I-N-E tasting, because that's all they do is taste their own wines. All this and more on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Summertime Blues on the Savage Nation. Now, you would expect me to be talking about Obama today. You'd expect me to be talking about the White House becoming Chicago's 51st ward. I'm not going to talk about any of that. I'm going to stay focused on something else today. And that is a profile of Michael Savage's in the New Yorker magazine. Remember I told you months ago for my regular listeners that a major mag guy wanted to do it. I didn't know whether to do it. You and I asked you whether I should do it. I included you in the emails. Remember that? Well, the article's coming out. Now, I expected it to be a hit piece. I will say that it's a pretty good portrait of me, but it's pretty funny, some of it. And Kalefa Sena, who wrote it, calls it Party of One, Michael Savage Unexpurgated. Now, I'm not going to read you the whole article. What I want you to do is go buy it. But we have a real, real, real treat for you today on the Savage Nation. And that is a, what's it called, monkey pod? What do they call it? A podcast. A monkey podcast of excerpts from the article, an interview with the author by the gentleman who writes the, edits this digital thing on the New Yorker. And I think you're going to get a kick out of it today. And I'll tell you why I'm going to play it. A, it's about me. But B, it's interesting to me that a major league organ of the liberal establishment, that is the New Yorker, would treat me more fairly than the National Review or the Weekly Standard or Conservative News Service. I can name a dozen sites that pose as conservatives who pretend Michael Savage doesn't exist. And it's interesting to me that the New Yorker, which you'd say, oh, that's the Bible of the liberal, would do a profile of you to begin with and not paint you as Hitler Jr., which they didn't do. I think it's very interesting that the intellectual or the intelligentsia of the liberals understand there's a nuance even in conservatives, and they got it very close to who I am. And, you know, I expected the, what do you call it? Well, let me go back in time. Play Desafinado for a minute by Stan Getz, because I was distracted with my email. I didn't get started the way I wanted to. All right, now play A-Train for me. See if you can dig up A-Train, because I'm going to get into the whole frame of the subway car, the Brooks Brothers raincoat with the tuna fish stain, Stan Getz. Here we go. See, now we're talking. Now you're getting into the rhythm of Michael Savage, as opposed to what the media wants you to think I am. I'm closer to Charlie Parker than I am to Pat Buchanan. I'm closer to Yankee Stadium than I am to whatever. The Nuremberg Rally? Does that work? That wasn't bad. That was a nice one, wasn't it? I caught that one on the fly. I mean, if I were jumping 20 feet in the air, I couldn't have caught a better ball than that one. Anyway, I'm in a pretty good mood because, all right, they get the picture. I'm only talking to 12 people today. The regular conservatives wanted to hear me railing against Obama or something to that effect, so they've turned the show off already. Instead, they're listening to someone who sounds like Groucho Marx's grandmother, who's just had a hysterectomy. When I was growing up, now let's say after high school, I'm in college. In college now, Queens College, I'm trying to make, you know, some ideas about who I want to be. You don't know who you are in college. You have no idea. You're focused only on dating, having sex, not, you know, doing badly in school, doing as well as you can. You know, you're just, you're floating along with the river, but you don't know who you are. Nobody in college knows who they are. Almost nobody does. They lie if they do. You'll tell me you knew who you were. All right, you're the rare one. But now how do you formulate who you are? Let's say you're a thinking person as I've been all my life. Serious guy, very deep. As I was told since I'm five, carried the world on my shoulders. That's what the neighborhood people said. They would look at me like, wow, like, okay, kid, you're carrying the world on your shoulders. You should be a this, you should be a that. So you try to figure out who you are. You can't do it through your own milieu because the people around you are not who you want to become. Now, don't take that the wrong way. In other words, you don't want to become a merchant necessarily. You don't want to open up a box factory, a corrugated box factory in Long Island City, although that was a good living, and they had an Oldsmobile 98 and you had a Chevy or whatever, a used Cadillac. You didn't aspire to be a guy who owned a corrugated box factory. So what did you want to be? You don't know. The parents say, be a doctor, because a doctor in those days was as close to God. Be a lawyer. That was as close to the devil as you can be, but he made money. You can't be a doctor or a lawyer. You could be a dentist. You don't like teeth and halitosis. You could be an accountant. You can't do that. You can always become a ventriloquist, whatever. But none of that worked for me. I didn't want to be any of those things. So I started to read very deeply. I read a lot of novels. Then I read a lot of biographies. Then I started to try to read the magazines that counted. And I forget the names of them in those days that were out. I can't even remember them. One of them was that I would read, you know, The New Yorker, and I'd see a lot of it was like movies to go to and theater that's on, and I never went to any of that. So I would notice who the profiles were done of whom they were writing. In other words, I'm going to take you back now in time. So I'm reading as a kid now in college, and I see there's profiles in the year 1960. I'm going to go back now to the early list. Profiles of people done by The New Yorker in the times I was in college. Federico Fellini, 1965. Bob Dylan, 1964. You say, oh, wow. Albert Einstein was already 1973. Dizzy Gillespie, 1990. Mort Saul, they profiled in 1960. Stanley Kubrick is profiled in 1966. Buckminster Fuller is profiled in 1966. Albert Einstein is profiled in 1973. One of my favorite profiles was a guy you never heard of named Joe Gould, who was a well-known Greenwich Village bohemian. I loved that profile so much. It actually stayed with me for ages. For some reason, it's because he was an iconoclastic bohemian in the Greenwich Village scene, and they hated his guts because he once said to the group of bohemians in Greenwich Village, I'll never forget it as long as I live, they were all sitting around having drinks, usually for free. If they can get some rich guy from uptown to buy him a drink, they were happy. So Joe Gould said, you know, you guys all pretend to be bohemians, but at the hint of a dollar, you jump up from your chairs and run as fast as you can. So they excommunicated him for that. I liked him for that. Then in 1960s, they profiled Richard Evan Schultes, a Harvard ethnobotanist. He was like my intellectual god for years. Remember, I have a PhD in nutritional ethnomedicine. I spent many years searching the jungles of the South Pacific for medicinal plants. My collections are in Kew Gardens, England. They're in the Bishop Museum in Honolulu and somewhere else. I don't know. They're all around the world. But what I'm getting at is when you see a profile of people like this, Ray Charles, 1968, Woody Allen, 1994, Martin Scorsese, 2000, you realize that these profiles are very rare and they're very important. And so, therefore, it was important for me to see the profile, how it would be written, because I was very skittish to do it. I was pretty sure that when the writer came out, he was coming out with an agenda. So even before he came, I sent him an email, I think, which he refers to where he says, I said to him, I'm afraid to do it because I know that the portrait will be of me you know, in the negative, and I say, will you pose me in an SS uniform or an SA uniform, and will you turn my 10-pound poodle into a pit bull? But, of course, they didn't do it. The profile, the portrait of me is quite good. I don't like the mouth very much. The eyes they caught. The mouth, I'm not sure if that's me. All right, it's a caricature. What can you do? You know, I have a sixth sense. I was walking around the Market Street area of San Francisco. I spent the whole day in the city because it was foggy in the evening, 57 degrees, 56 degrees. I had to wear an overcoat, which I just love. I love the fog. But earlier in the day, it was sunny, not hot, down near the Embarcadero, near the ferry terminal. They have various people selling trinkets and whatnot, open-air market. And one of them is a caricaturist. The $3.99, he'll do you a one-minute portrait. You know the kind, they do a sketch of you like at Fisherman's Wharf or you know where you are. So I watched this guy do it. He was very fast and very good. And for the first time in my life, I don't know what it was, I was tempted to spend the $10 and say, do me a quick portrait. I don't know what it was. I didn't do it. Should I start reading the article? Wait a minute. Hold it. I'll read you a few sentences because many of you don't know what I'm talking about. Let's see. Even in this world of born-again refuseniks, Michael Savage is an anomaly, a heretic among heretics. Nearly as contemptuous of his fellow radio stars, he refers to Limbaugh as the golfer and calls Beck the hemorrhoid with eyes, as he is of President Obama. He calls himself a genuine independent conservative, which is a kind of sales pitch and apparently an effective one. His daily broadcast, The Savage Nation, is one of the most popular shows in the country. Then they go on, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to skip around here because some of this stuff made me laugh hysterically. The stuff about the dog is just funny, about me wanting to cook Teddy's leg. Not that I want to cook Teddy's leg. Like if I was starving to death and we're both going to die, sort of like a Sophie's Choice thing, would you cook your dog's leg since you're both going to die anyway? So that's that. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know, there's a subversive crisis interwoven with the fiscal crisis, and it's social engineering by the way of inflation. What do I mean by that? Well, here to explain it is Lowell Ponte. He's co-authored a book with one of my advertisers, Craig Smith of Swiss America. The book is called The Inflation Deception, 6 Ways Government Tricks Us and 7 Ways to Stop It. Joining me now on The Savage Nation, Lowell Ponte.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dr. Savage.
Well, we know government tries to manipulate and control people in a variety of ways, but how do they do it through inflation?
Well, in our new book, we try to go into a whole range of things they're doing. Our book is almost as deep in its own way as your brilliant book, Trickle Up Poverty. So in The Inflation Deception, Craig R. Smith and I have dug to the roots of what government fiat money really is, how government uses it to deceive us and control us. We show, for example, how the Obama administration deliberately uses inflation as a hidden tax on all of us. Every time they print money, they devalue the money that you have earned, saved, hidden under your mattress. They can take the value out of your money even if they don't know you have it, or even if you've been able to get it on the black market. Basically, anyone who relies on government fiat money, paper money nowadays, is subject to being taxed continually. In fact, they can tax away almost all the value of their money anytime they wish. We show, for example, how the Obama administration deliberately uses inflation the way Lenin proposed. By debasing the money, you not only destroy the bourgeoisie, you not only destroy the social values associated with the bourgeoisie, such as savings and hard work, but you enrich the government. Frankly, inflation is being used for social engineering and income redistribution because without inflation, you cannot sustain a welfare state. If you had to pay for a welfare state with honest taxes on honest, stable money, you couldn't do it because the economy goes up and down. But welfare payments always have to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You can't allow those payments to go down if you're running a welfare state. So therefore, they have to have a money system they can print as much of as they want whenever they want.
Well, Lowell, you've said that inflation is like an addictive drug. How does it work in that way?
Scientists have now helped develop a discipline called neuroeconomics. They're discovering how money and inflation can also trigger chemical changes in the brain just the way an addictive drug does, and how we are being controlled through this. For example, under money illusion, which economists also call inflation illusion, people will irrationally think that it is better to get a $4 raise in a 5% inflationary environment than it is to get a $2 raise in a 1% inflationary environment. In the environment Mr. Obama is now creating, the inflation is going to be so high that, frankly, nobody will be able to save for retirement reliably because the dollar is disintegrating in front of our eyes. This is why we desperately need to get back to some form of money or value that the politicians can neither create nor destroy by printing, whether that is bullets, whether that is antiques, whether it's survival food, or the standard of gold and silver. By the way, you might have noticed just a few days ago, Ron Paul in Congress asked Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, is gold money? And Bernanke said, no, gold is not money. Well, Michael, you and I know, and your audience knows, the U.S. Constitution says gold is money, but paper isn't. The Bible says gold is one of only four things that are really money, cattle, land, silver, and gold. So this week, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke repudiated both the U.S. Constitution and the Bible in sworn testimony before Congress.
So what's this form of government which you've termed inflatocracy?
What we've come to call inflatocracy is government of, by, and for inflation. A government that relies simply on printing more and more money as an alternative to open taxation. As Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union, said, the way you destroy the bourgeoisie is to grind it down between the millstones of taxation and inflation. You literally disintegrate social values. So, for example, in the paradigm established by America's founders, Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. In the new paradigm of the inflatocracy, a penny saved is a penny lost to inflation. They believe, as John Maynard Keynes did, that saving is actually evil, that savings prevent the money from moving as fast as possible through the economy, and that slows the economy down. That retards economic growth. So people who save are evil, and of course people who saved are punished under an inflatocracy by losing the value in their savings. Just how insane has our government gotten, Michael? Our government now, 42 cents out of every dollar it spends is borrowed money, borrowed from people like communist China, who therefore own us. The Bible itself says the person who is a debtor is a slave to the person he owes that money to. We owe it to communist China. So how fast are we borrowing, Michael? We are borrowing $58,000 a second. And adding that to the debt, to the bar tab, our children, grandchildren will pay. So count with me, dot, dot, dot. Your government has just borrowed another $174,000 and added it to our debt, $3.5 million a minute, $210 million an hour. For some historic perspective on what that means to pioneering Americans, back in 1803, Thomas Jefferson bought from a bankrupt Napoleon a thing called the Louisiana Purchase, 890,000 square miles of land. That land today constitutes the states of Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, Iowa, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, as well as sizable portions of what today are, gasp, Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, and the southern parts of Alberta and Saskatchewan. That's what we now borrow every hour and 10 minutes in inflation-adjusted dollars. If you want to round it off to 2 hours, Michael, you can throw in what the U.S. paid in 1867 for Alaska. In other words, every 2 hours, our government is now borrowing and adding to our debt as much inflation-adjusted money as we paid for two-thirds of the United States west of the Mississippi. And they tell us we're not in trouble.
How far back in U.S. history can we trace real inflation?
We can trace inflation back to the beginning in U.S. history to paper money the Continental Congress put out that came to be called not worth a continental, in part because they printed it willy-nilly, in part because they didn't understand modern economic theory, but also in part because the British were trying to defeat us by counterfeiting vast amounts of our own revolutionary currency. So the British very cleverly tried to make our currency worthless. The funny thing is now it's our own government that is making our currency worthless, by in effect counterfeiting it. That's what you do when you print money that is not backed up by any new productivity or any new things to buy. And yet in America today, we have twice as many people working for government as we have working in all of manufacturing combined. As you point out in your book, Trickle Up Poverty, those government workers in the federal government are making about twice as much as workers in the private sector, and yet they are the ones Barack Obama was protecting with nearly $5 trillion in government stimulus. The problem is now even the chief economist for the Federal Reserve Bank in St. Louis, Yi Wen, just analyzed the stimulus and found not only didn't it work to create jobs, it actually retarded the creation of jobs because it so frightened business people who saw the tsunami, as you and we both call it, of inflation about to engulf the country, that they stopped investing and they stopped hiring new people. So the whole inflation, with all the cost it's added to our children and grandchildren, actually did more harm than good.
So what's the most shocking thing you came across when researching and writing the book?
I think the most shocking thing I encountered was the head of the New York Federal Reserve just after World War II in a little noted speech that we document and tell people how they can retrieve in the inflation deception. In a speech, he said, you know, we in the government, we don't even need to tax people anymore. We can run the entire government just by printing money. Inflation, of course, is an insidious tax. It's part of the reason why, under our welfare state, 47% of the people in this country now pay no income tax. Oh, they pay the tax in the form of higher prices, but they don't notice that, of course. So the effect is 47% of the population believes the government is just a big dispenser of free goodies that they don't have to pay for. And by the way, a recent Gallup poll also showed exactly 47% of the population believe we should have more income redistribution in the country. When you have a country that determined to deny capitalism, deny private property, you're going to have inflation running the other way. This is not a terribly bright future for the country, and the moral of it is we need to take steps, including some of those that you propose in Trickle Up Poverty. We need to go to a balanced budget amendment. We need a flat tax. We need other government changes. But at the end of the day, it's like the little red hen. You're ultimately going to have to do it yourself. You're going to have to create your own gold standard. You're going to have to shift this phony government paper money that we rely on, that they can destroy overnight and are about to, into something that is tangible, that they can't print, they can't destroy, they can't create, something, like gold or silver, or antiques, or other things. But for God's sake, get out of paper money. It's like holding your life savings in the stock of a company on the verge of bankruptcy.
You said you've read my book, Trickle Up Poverty. What do you think of it?
We think people should read both your book, Trickle Up Poverty, and our new book, The Inflation Deception. And so we join you. We would like to help people. You know, in honor of you and our recent celebration of America's birthday, Michael, we would like to give away 5,000 copies to your millions of listeners. Call us, leave your name, phone number. We'll get back to you, get your address, and send a copy out to you. My co-author, you know Craig R. Smith very well, he had retired. He wanted to just live a life of leisure and comfort and prayer and working on his own spiritual growth. And then he looked around and said, you know, this country is going to hell in a handbasket for my children and grandchildren. I simply can't let this happen. I'm going to have to come back and devote my life to educating people, much as you do, Michael. We are trying to awaken people, to show them there is an alternative, to help them find a way out of the kind of doomsday situation the government has now created for all of us. So the number to get the free book, 800-630-1494, for the first 5,000 people who call. Don't worry about whatever time it is or what station you're listening on. We would like to get these books out as far and wide as possible to educate people. 800-630-1494. Leave your name, leave your number, and we will get back to you, and you will get a remarkable book. We have a government that's trying to turn us into Europe, that is trying to turn us into the very land most of our ancestors fled to get away from. The frontiers are being chained and padlocked. Opportunity is being crushed. Taxes are oppressing people. Government regulation is strangling opportunity and business in this country. And this has to be stopped. So we are honored to join hands with you, Michael, in trying to awaken people and to fight the kind of thing that's being done to destroy our country and find ways to reverse it.
Lowell Ponte, thank you for joining us on the Savage Nation.
My pleasure.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Now we go to page 4. Cuomo soars in poll. I guess Perry Como's records are on the rise now in New York City because the Perry Como records are up 70% in New York City. Iran zoo kills 14 lions. Okay. Thoreau plants dug up. Bikini babe decks hottie at Vegas pool, New York suit. See, I'm giving you the geography of Murdoch's mind, how we range from one salacious article to the next. Video game anxiety link. Preg gal's car heisted at HOSP. Beach body ID'd. You know, if I read this paper every day, I'd need a psychiatric medication. I have never seen such... How can they mix things up like this? No wonder kids are going crazy. School's big drop in Intel. Down shocking 75% in science competition. No kidding! No kidding! Down 75% in science competition with the morons in the schools today on medication? And you wonder why China's taking us over? Bronx High School of Science fielded 8 of the city's 14 Intel semifinalists. Only 14 city public high school seniors were named as semifinalists in the prestigious Intel Science Talent Search this year, a dizzying plunge of 75% since 1998. The all-time low is part of a troubling trend. Now, you know why this is happening. You know why the kids are behind in math and science and reading and writing. It's because from the first grade on, they're taught how to put a condom on a cucumber. They're taught that mommy has two, that Becky has two daddies, and Harry has two mommies. They're taught that capitalism is evil. They're taught that communism is cool. They're taught that learning is passé, and they're taught that aggression is evil. And so there you see the farce. How does it start? The unions did it all. It all started with the unions. The unions took over the schools. The teachers' unions took over the schools. The teachers' unions put in a curriculum that is guaranteed to keep the students moronic, in cahoots with the media government complex tied in with the pharmaceutical medical complex. What you have is a drop not only in science but in virtually every useful subject imaginable. Where I live in California a few years ago, I commented on this program, The Savage Nation. They spent they raised a bond issue of $6 to $7 million. And take a guess what they built in the high school. Did they build a new math laboratory? No. Did they build a new computer laboratory? No. Did they build a new science laboratory? No. You know what they built? A theater. They built a theater for all the young pot-headed thespians in Marin County, California, a place where science is unheard of. And so this trend, of course, has now come home to roost in terms of a drop in intelligence, a drop in competitiveness, a drop in overall intelligence, and a rise in absolute and utter mediocrity all the way up to the White House.
We've got to make sure that folks who have been blessed by this society are given a little bit back, whether it's closing corporate loopholes on corporate jets or oil and gas, or making sure that folks who can well afford it are paying a little bit more in order to make sure that we're not putting a burden on that steel worker or that senior citizen or that student who's out there trying to get a student loan.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199. 800-255-4199 or go to AmericaIsRising.com. 800-255-4199. AmericaIsRising.com. We shall go on in Murdoch's genius. We will now turn to page 12 and see what's there. Star has mad jewel moment. Tom and Nicole in tight squeeze. Still looking for news. Now remember, this is the newspaper that is a sister
journalistic outlet to Fox News, where you have such esteemed journalists as Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck. And so we're at page 13, and so far there's been no news. Now we turn to page 14. Town to town, a mobile actor. Nothing, no news yet. Page 15, page 16, here we go. And here we read the article in the New York Post. President Obama and his family honored the Reverend Martin Luther King by volunteering at a school and urging all Americans to remember the slain civil rights leader's dream of service. Now, not only is this cynical, but it's absurd. What in the heck does painting dancing fruit on a middle school wall have to do with civil rights, Michelle? Moreover, what does slurping ice cream on every trip have to do with telling children to eat healthfully? Moreover, what does eating cheeseburgers at Martha's Vineyard have to do with lying to the children about eating carrots? So therefore, nothing that you read has any meaning whatsoever, whether it be this newspaper or any other newspaper in America. We turn now to page 19. Now we're getting into the heavy news. It took us 20 pages to get here. John Paul's blood bound for new altar. Now think about this. The Pope of the Christian world, the Catholic world at least, is a big story, right? And we read a vial containing blood drawn from Pope John Paul II, shortly before he died, will be installed as a relic in a Polish church soon after his beatification. It's a big story, and yet it's on page 20. Instead, we see the blood of a starlet literally spilled all over the pages of the New York Post. And you wonder why the liberals mock conservatives. Believe me.